This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Live and Learn with me, Hezra Lashraf.
And me, Dashran Johan.
So nearly a year after Lanka Sheraton, former Prime Minister Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad remains a relevant part of our country's political fabric. And for Pakatan Harapan, the never-ending question of working with the political icon continues to be a main sticking point in a united opposition, or as I'd like to say it, it's complicated.
Yeah, it is complicated indeed, right? Because even if we turn back time to GE14, the result of the election was a sign of hope for many Malaysians. But as weeks and months went by, PH Pakatan Harapan started to lose some of their popularity, and many experts have pointed to not just the decades-long beef between Mahathir and Anwar, but also Tun M himself, whose ideas and mindset seems to be of a different era.
Yep, and so the question we want to look at today is, should Pakatan Harapan distance themselves from Tun M moving forward, or should they continue working with him as we anticipate, you know, possible snap election after the emergency has been lifted and COVID-19 is under control?
That's right.
And joining us on the show to give his insights is Professor Dr. Shamsul Amri Baharuddin, a frequent commenter on Malaysian politics and director of the Institute of Ethnic Studies, or KITA, at UKM. Prof, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much for the invitation.
Pleasure. So let's get into it. Tun M has claimed multiple times that he and his Parti Bersatu were kingmakers in the 14th general election, that Pakatan Harapan would not have been able to win if it wasn't for him and the way that they were able to garner Malay support. Do you think this is true? Would you agree with this view?
Well, I think we don't have to agree. It is proven to us that Bersatu was not registered before the GE14 election, and he switched tactics and he said, okay, I join you PH, but we use PKR's flag so that we don't have to show the AP flag, we don't have to show anybody's flag but PKR flag. And there he was. You know, we know the results now. So what else we say? The question is not so much about Tun Mahathir, it's how close, how solid are the relationships between the component party of PH? Was there already a mature relationship existed, or this is a last-minute ditch action that produced fantastic historical results? So this is the question that I always ask myself.
Prof, I want to dig into that a little bit, right? Because, you know, Tun M says that, yes, he and his party were kingmakers. Some agree. You say that we don't have to agree or disagree. That's proof that that's true. But I also want to push back that PKR as a party was already gaining serious momentum in GE12 and GE13. Do you think that Pakatan Harapan would have really needed Tun M heading into GE14 if Anwar Ibrahim wasn't in prison?
Well, put it this way. PKR knows it has tried two times and failed to cross the line. So Mahathir came, Anwar out, and Anwar decided to accept Mahathir to lead. And that's what happened. And he did really produce the results that PKR has been wanting so much, you know, first with Pakatan Rakyat and then with PH. So it's very difficult to take him from that historical period and say that he is not instrumental. Of course, PKR have got his support. And then a lot of the people are unhappy too. And Tun Mahathir has run his own personal demonization campaign of Najib. So it's a mixture of many negative things that BN just failed to defend itself. So that is the other factor. When you go against an enemy is not able to defend itself. So it's opening itself to trouble. And that's what we see. So the combination of these interesting episodes enable us to see, and the whole country went through a historical change. And what I'm very proud of is the fact that the transition of power was done peacefully. Whatever Mahathir did, right or wrong, or whatever the politicians think about him, we did manage to transfer from one 61-year-old government to a very new government. And I think that is a great fact that we have to recognize.
Right, Prof. In the intro, we briefly mentioned that we know that Pakatan Harapan started losing popularity after the elections, the GE14, right? Did Tun M play a role in Pakatan Harapan's dwindling popularity that, you know, slowly it started to decline after the elections?
You see, you have to read this with along with decline of support for Pakatan Harapan during 5 by-elections, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, to lose the by-election slowly all over the country, including in Sabah, also in Johor, with a huge majority, including the switch of Chinese voters, I think it's not just Tun Mahathir, but the whole Pakatan Harapan government, who has no leader really, the second-rang leader. There's not much second-rang leader in the sense that, you know, everyone is giving their opinion, DAP giving opinion, Amanah, because they are used to this being opposition. So now they don't realize they are a ruling party and they cannot behave like an opposition. So it's quite interesting how people feel they shouldn't be fighting among themselves, but moving forward. So I think this is what's happening. You can see all the, from the newspaper reports, TV, radio, and social media, there's always this contestation between some parts of PKR people and some parts of DAP and Amanah. So I think Mahathir is trying his best to do things with one condition: Anwar is not going to be the Prime Minister. So when the PH pushed Mahathir and he keeps shifting the time schedule to November and finally in February, he didn't push anymore, he got pushed. So he just left.
Mm.
And I think this is an interesting way PH came up and successfully with all the support, and suddenly the support dwindled. And this is where you also must ask, with this dwindling of support, does it mean this opposition is going back to UMNO or Barisan? I'm not quite sure. A lot of people think they are going to go. They made a U-turn. Mahathir made a U-turn. The UMNO people, the people who suffered PH made a U-turn. But where are they going with this U-turn? We're not clear. So that's why discussion like this are very important for us to see where are we going in this present situation. Mm. Yeah.
So we want to get into your point on how when Tun M was Prime Minister, there was no deputy, right? There
right.
was no second in command that was able to establish themselves. We'll get to that later because that's an important point. But let's look at Tun M in the meantime. So it's been nearly a year since Langkah Sheraton. Well, it seems ages ago.
Yeah, right.
And while Tun M is no longer Prime Minister, he seems to remain a very relevant part of the political landscape, or at least he's still present, right? He's making it clear that he's still here. The question is, though, how relevant is Tun M at this point in time? Where does he stand politically speaking?
I think it's not the question of relevance. I think the question where he is as the most senior respected leader and politician in the country, even among Malay party leaders, UMNO, PAS and PN leaders.
Mm.
Respected and referred to by business people, foreign leaders, mass media and various NGOs. He may not have official political position like a Prime Minister, but he still wields a huge influence among investors too. So you have to be very careful when you talk about him being relevant or not relevant. Because in politics, it's always relevant. The question is whether in the right position or not.
Mm.
So he may not in a position that can sort of exude that relevance, but I think he's still influential. I can see people lining up. If I go to Perdana Leadership Foundation, I can see people lining up to see him. And or at the Bukhari Institute or whatever he usually goes to. Yeah, his appointment books is full. So it's quite interesting when, as a researcher, I look into this and I find that there is an unending support for him or almost like idolizing him. Mm. I mean, this is where it is interesting for me to see. He may not be the leader, in the terms of pangkat or position, but he is still respected by everybody. And you see, during the funeral of Toh Puan Raha, he was there. He came to see Najib and say, okay, friends are friends. Enemies are enemies. Politics are politics. But this is my friend. Tun Razak was the one who made me and brought me back to UMNO politics and national politics. So we want to see a very binary opposition kind of situation, the way we analyze things. But I don't think that binary opposition really works in this country, because we can see coalition after coalition, re-coalition, reorganize itself. There's no binary opposition here. We are looking at a continuum flow of fluidity, of decision-making and people jockeying for support and so on. So Mahathir remains, I hate to have this literal joke, I call it, he rides horses, so he rides politics quite well too. So I think we have to give him credit where credit is due. But now more so than ever, he may not have the power of the PM, but he has the aura of the PM. He goes around and I can see that his invitation list for to speak is very, very long, you know. So in this politics as consumerism, he is a product, he is a commodity. This is how I see.
And Prof, let's dive into the complexity of the Pakatan Harapan relationship with Dr. Mahathir, right? Because ever since Parliament reconvened following Langkah Sheraton, Tun M has stuck to his word and sat on the opposition bench every time the Dewan is in session. But his relationship with Pakatan Harapan seems to be very rocky. And this is like, you know, it's always back and forth. Mm. You don't really know where he stands. Why exactly is it this way?
We have to separate his sitting position in Parliament and his relationship with PH. They're quite distinct and erratic, all right? But principally, according to him, that we have heard many times, I don't support the government now because they support kleptocrats, because Mahyudin is with BN, whom he vilify them, so he doesn't want to sit with them. So that's the position he took. But his relationship with PH is the axis of the relationship is still his refusal, Anwar, to be the Prime Minister, even though he is leader of PH and PKR. So that's why sometimes you see him with Tengku Razali together against PN government. That is clear. So don't imagine because in the opposition bloc that he has to follow what every opposition party said, because the opposition is also broken up into different factions. So Mahathir has got his own faction, and then now Syed Siddiq has his own, I call him a little Kaldai, or walking around alone by himself. Mm. Yeah. So it's quite interesting.
for now at least.
Yeah.
Right. So on that note, Prof, we do need to go for a quick break. We're speaking with Professor Dr. Shamsul Amri Baharuddin, a frequent commenter on Malaysian politics and director of the Institute of Ethnic Studies at UKM. We'll be back here on BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn. I'm Hezra Lashraf alongside Dashran Johan. And today we're joined on Skype by Professor Dr. Shamsul Amri Baharuddin, a frequent commenter on Malaysian politics and director of the Institute of Ethnic Studies, or KITA, at UKM. And he's sharing his insights on whether Pakatan Harapan should distance themselves from former Prime Minister Tun Dr. Mahathir, or if they need to work with him heading into the next general election. So, Prof, despite the unresolved issues between Tun M and Anwar, we can that's a whole show by itself. Other PH component parties like DAP and Amanah have, to an extent, I think, been open to the idea of supporting Tun M. Why do you think this is?
I said earlier that the relationship among the PH component parties are not as solid as BN and MIC and MCA, because it's very new, you know. You remember PAS was part of them under Pakatan Rakyat, and then ejected, and then Amanah came as a replacement, what I call the DAP Islamic component. You know, in a sense, it's interesting to see this unsure relationship, up and down and fluid, doesn't ossify into something really solid that I don't like you, I hate you. Tun Mahathir remains open to see them. And you don't know, they all see him in various occasions, you know, and meet him. And, you know, when they meet him, Mahathir is still the respect Sifu, you know, PH. Among Amanah people, among the AP, they're probably closer to Mahathir compared to PKR, because PKR, you know, Anwar is always watching who is for him, against him, and so on. You know? So I think this is where they are, where Tun M and PKR and Tone M, DAP, and Amana. And Tone M just sitting pretty there and said, okay, come see me. I'm happy to see you. So this is what we are looking at all the time, that this man is there. You want to see me, you come. Otherwise, it's okay. So this is an interesting way of conducting a dyadic relationship or triadic pattern of relationship.
Prof, you know, I'm always curious to know, do you think, you know, like we discussed how the situation is fluid. We discussed that, you know, people like DAP and Amana, they are willing to work with Tun M. But do you think by doing so, they are making a mistake? They might be putting their own party's popularity at stake.
Yeah, among the grassroots, right?
Yeah, among the grassroots supporters. Or is this a good political move? Is this to their advantage working with Tun M?
You see, we must remember, whatever you say about the AP, the very strong support from the Chinese is without question.
Mm-hmm.
It's fantastic. But they cannot rule the country if they don't have support from the Malays. This MCA has realized 60 years ago. So that's why he's still, you know, the AP still, like it or not, Tun M is seen as the Malay leader, even though he is not in any party, UMNO or PAS or PKR, but he's still rubbing shoulders with top leaders, except for Najib, you know, and all the Mahkamah cluster, you know, probably not. But otherwise, he's still being referred to. I know Amana people come to see him quite often.
Separately, you know, we've seen Tun M backing Warisan President Dato' Sri Shafiq Abdal as a potential prime ministerial candidate. You know, do you think this is meant to undermine Pakatan Harapan, or is it a genuine attempt, politically speaking, to help the coalition gain voter support, right? So in other words, is this a Pakatan Harapan plus 2.0 move, or is it meant to fire political shots at Anwar and say, you know, you don't have the popularity, you don't have the numbers, but Shafiq Abdal does?
Yeah, well, you must remember, Mahathir doesn't want Anwar, in whatever form, to be the prime minister. He cannot be a prime minister, full stop. Why? Some people accuse Mahathir is afraid of Anwar's revenge. These are all what the grassroots is talking about, why so bitter and against Anwar. All right. Now he has to give an option. He can't just say, no, Anwar Ibrahim. How does he stop Anwar? Perhaps the new candidate called Shafiq Abdal, which I think is very weak as a potential PM. You see, you must understand, Tun M also wants support from Sabah. He knows Sabah has got its own potential. So Shafiq Abdal seems to be good with him. The rest of the candidates are all in UMNO. Okay? The potential PM, potential deputy PM, all in UMNO, all in PN. So if you line them up, like the way people line up at the police station, you know, you line them up, yeah. You see, which is very few that he has, he can make a choice of. Very few. So Shafiq Abdal is one of the shining stars. So I think his proposition could be just convenient proposition, but still, this Mahathir is full of tongue and cheek, you have to understand. You know, he speaks one thing, he does another thing. So I think Shafiq Abdal was a choice that he has to make publicly. But whether he eventually would support him is another matter. Yeah.
Prof, Tun M is, you know, he has a lot of wit. He has a lot of tongue-in-cheek jokes. But is he still popular? And I know he's relevant. Yeah. We talked about how relevant he is among, you know, there are people, there will always be people lining up. But that's always with these big celebrity politicians, right? And their opinions will also remain relevant among the people who are political enthusiasts, you know, things like that. But what about the masses? When it comes to actually winning an elections, now let's say GE15 and forward, do you think Pakatan Harapan needs Tun M, or does Tun M need Pakatan Harapan? Maybe not just for his sake, but maybe for his son and whatever legacy that he wants to leave.
I would put it another way. Mahathir is in a position to choose where he wants to go. If in GE14 and 208 and GE14, he put a support, even though minority support, but with a majority impact with PH, he can do the same if there is other component party who to get together. You know, because he is in a position to choose. other parties and coalition, they can choose him, but he is making the final decision. We just don't know, because after GE14, we know that the configuration of coalition in Malaysia can change quite quickly. And in that confusion, the rural voters, the grassroots voters, will decide to support which has a stronger voice rather than good promises, you know. So I think this is quite interesting the way I see what's coming in the next election.
Yeah, and I want to follow up on what you just said, Prof, because, you know, Tun M has constantly said it for years. You know, he says the Malay voters will not vote for a multiracial party. And it seems that in some instances, the AP and Amanah realize this, which is why they don't want to completely burn the bridge with Tun M. So, you know, do you think this is true? Does Pakatan Harapan need Tun M's backing to bring in Malay voters, to bring in, you know, support for the next general election, or can, you know, can they do it by themselves, as Anwar claims?
Anwar has a lot of supporters, okay? But Mahathir has a lot more. That's all I can say. So I think if we just go on that basis, if you put Anwar and Mahathir contesting tomorrow for Mr. Malaysia, I think Mahathir will be down, you know? So you cannot deny it, because at the bottom, suddenly, you see, in a Malay society, it has the royalty, the pseudo-royal, and whatever else, and used to have slaves, you know? This is the kind of society you're looking at. So the people at the bottom really respect the what I call the traditional feudalism values are still there. This is what Chandra Muzaffar talks about, the protector.
Right, you mean historically speaking, right?
Yeah. Mm. So when you go to the ground, you have time, you go to the ground, you see how Mahathir being received by people who would come to when he comes for a talk. Yeah, during election campaign, people don't turn up to see, listen him. But during a situation where things are not sure and not clear, I think they will look for someone to tell them what to do. And Mahathir is one of the few people who can command that position. So PH must realize this is what this man has. Mm. In Malay, there is a phrase called Quran Buruk. Quran Buruk means this old Quran. Even how old is the Quran is still a Quran. So this terminology is even being used about Mahathir quite often.
Interesting.
So it's quite interesting how people reason and rationalize this in this country.
But Prof, Tun M is just one person, right? And there's no doubt that, you know, he can be 100 years old if he's fit and he runs for election, he's going to get that one MP seat, right? But when it comes to winning elections in our system, it's about multiple people in multiple constituencies winning each individual seats that they are contesting in, then coming together and seeing who has the majority and all that, right? It's the first-past-the-post system. And in the recent interview with BFM, Tun M implied that Perjuang as a party would be kingmakers in the next election. But when you look at Perjuang, it's pretty much a splinter party of a splinter party, right? Bersatu was a splinter party of UMNO, and Perjuang is a splinter party of Bersatu. And even Bersatu, at the height of the sort of wave of momentum that they were riding in GE14, they only won, I believe, 12 MP seats in parliament. So how big of a role do you think Perjuang will be playing in the next elections?
First, they got to get registered, okay? If they are not registered, they can still do the Hoduni Act like they did PRU 14 and 218 election. So I think it's not about minority majority. It's about dragging across the finish line. I think that's the one that we have seen, dragging the party to finish and complete what they have done. This is where Anwar was not able to do for two elections. Okay? So you have to accept the fact that the opposition needs now to pull them. Anwar keep on claiming I have 115 seats, 140 seats. You can go and claim until the cows come home. It doesn't work that way. It doesn't work. He has to go to election. So if he wants to wrest power and become the prime minister, so Anwar can be called coming back through the front door. I don't know. And this is interesting phrases that we begin to use in this country. Yeah? So it's a bit tough if they ignore Tun Mahathir, because Tun Mahathir can also be a spoiler. I mean, it's quite easy, because there are 74 Malay parliamentary seats, Malay dominant, which means 60% voters are Malays.
Right. 74, and you mean 174, is it?
Yeah.
Right. And of course, you said for Pejuang to be, you know, to become kingmakers in the first place, and help you know, coalitions cross the finish line, so to speak, they have to be registered. And obviously, they weren't. The ROS rejected Pejuang's registration. You know, in light of this, then, what options does Tun M have to prepare for a potential general election? Because that could happen as soon as Prime Minister Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin says, okay, COVID-19 is under control, emergency is over, let's call for a general election, right? He promised this in his speech a few days ago. So what's a realistic option for Tun M if his party is not registered?
Realistically, there are about 10 to 15 members of parliament who are unhappy, whether PH unhappy with PH, PN unhappy with PN. All right?
Mm.
People like Nazri, people like whatever, Jazlan or whatever his name is from Kelantan. I mean, there are these people who are splinters. They don't know where they're going. They don't know whom they're going to support. So Mahathir can marshal this and make his group. You see how novice like Mazli became minister from nobody, and then he made, and then Sadiq. So he can get all these people. These are the things that we have to also consider. It's not just political party jockeying for support.
Right, but practically speaking, right, if there's a general election, say this year, and Pejuang is not registered, there's no time to form a new party. Voters will have to go to the ballot. They need to choose a logo. You know, what's a realistic, you know, last-minute decision for Tun M to make if he has to? Like, what if we had to pick a logo for him to choose, what would he choose if the general election is, say, tomorrow?
There are 150 logos provided by the election commission that you can choose from.
So, Prof, you're saying that he can run as an independent candidate? Like, once he collects his 15 people, all of them run as independent candidates?
Why not? Because, you see, I'm arguing, which some people say I'm crazy argument. I said, no. The coalition is getting more refined, the way we run this country. More refined. So people are less concerned about whether they are PAS or PN. Because in PKR, there are people who are asking Anwar to stop. In UMNO, there are people asking Zahid to come down. So there are these people. And you can collect enough of these people. They can call themselves whatever it is. They just choose one symbol, symbol of, say, a chicken. So, and then chuk the strategic group. This is what I call them, strategic group. Now, political parties, they're just strategic group. They temporarily got together that can provide extra boost. You know, you buy these two petrol, green and yellow petrol at the station. So, you know, I think that's what they're doing. I can see them planning already. Can we hold together and provide support for a party that needs our support so that they can be in the government? That is the way things are working out now. So because of the balance that we can see now, or rather the imbalance that we see, this proposition is possible.
Yeah. All right, Prof. Before we let you go, just quick final thoughts. You know, from the perspective of Pakatan Harapan themselves as a party, as a coalition, should they distance themselves from Tun Dr. Mahathir, or should they continue to engage with him and work together with him, which would sort of help them get over the finish line in the next elections?
The most important thing, PH are not united on this subject matter. DAP has a good opinion, so as Amana, which is the brother of DAP, and PKR has got its own. And inside each of this party, while we look at UMNO quarreling, I'm watching how DAP is quarreling among themselves. So while we want to use this, again, binary opposition between PH and Tun M, I see there are bits and pieces that are not fit really into that picture that we would like PH to be. If they are in a 2018 sort of formation, fine. But after the downfall of PH government in February 2020, things have changed. And the, you see Azmin and gang get out and out of PKR. So there are, I would say these are broken pieces being pulled together. The dream has to be kept alive. Tun M seems to be, I don't know how far, but one man who can help.
Okay, so I know Dash said final thoughts, but based on what you just said, I don't think we can let you go quite yet, because if that's the situation, if that's the state of things that Pakatan Harapan is in relation to Tun Mahathir, where do you see this ending up? Do you see Pakatan Harapan splitting itself and some people end up going with Tun M while other people end up with, you know, going with Anwar? If you were to look into a, as I always say, a glass ball and make a prediction, where do you see this ending up? Where do you see Pakatan Harapan ending up in relation with Tun M? What's their fate?
Put it this way. Tun M will give his clear condition. Don't push me. If I become prime minister, don't push me to resign. And I don't want Anwar to be prime minister. If you can't work with it, fine. So he sells his product another market, like Pasar Malam. Okay? So the politics of Pasar Malam in Malaysia is thriving very well. You can see that, you know, everyone is hedging and selling. So that's what I said. I'm not surprised if a group of MPs or politicians or rich people, you must remember, you have to have a rich backing, okay? This is not just a kampung politic where so supply goreng pisang, everyone will agree with you, no? This is real big stuff. You have to have money to campaign, to do all those things. And if they, if Mahathir can pull together, not Perjuang, not Muda, but people who really wants to become more important, because it's possible now, you join a party and then you come out and become minister. I mean, this is not impossible now. Past, never thought that it could be in a federal government, four or five of them in the federal government and looking smart with their Armani suit and so on and shining belly shoes. So it's interesting for me.
Right. Prof, thanks so much for speaking with us today and weighing in.
Yeah, I'm happy to speak to you. Yeah,
good. All right. Good to hear from you. That was Professor Datuk Dr. Shamsul Amri Baharuddin, a frequent commenter on Malaysian politics and director of the Institute of Ethnic Studies, or KITA, at UKM. And he was sharing his insights on whether Pakatan Harapan should distance themselves from Tun Dr. Mahathir or proceed with working for him in preparation for a potential general election.
That's right. So if you missed any part of today's conversation or any previous Live and Learn episodes, you can check out our podcast on the BFM app, bfm.my, or even subscribe to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or pretty much wherever you get your podcasts from. You just have to search BFM Live and Learn. Once again, I'm Darshan Johan. Alongside me, Hezrul Ashraf, and this has been Live and Learn on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.